Hey guys, Bryce here from Flex Cortex. All content on the Flex Cortex podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes. It is not a substitution for medical advice from a qualified health professional. Thank you and enjoy the podcast. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with my coach, Eric Bugera. Eric has bared with me for, 3 years, and a half years.
Time is a construct, dude.
It was June of 2021, I think. I don't know how this is relevant information. It's not, but a long time. So for those of you that don't know Eric, he has a master's in kinesiology, a bachelor's in nutritional sciences. He's also an educator for Prescript, so he had his hypertrophy seminar, but he does a lot of the current educational stuff through the collective, and he's actually been in the field for over a decade, so within that, a lot of experience and time, and then he's mainly online, but also in person a little bit as well. So first of all, thank you for coming on today. For today, we're going to talk about a little bit of a deep dive into exercise intention. And ultimately getting the most out of your training. I think we all see it enough where people are just like in the gym, they're ripping through their workouts, they're throwing weight around. So we're going to talk about the nuance of things a little bit and just try to develop a little bit of a deeper understanding of why you're picking things, the rationale for it, and then even how to get better at what you're currently trying to do. So for those of you that don't know who you are, can you give a little overview of your story? So from the first time you picked up a dumbbell to when you wanted to go to school and to current day.
Yeah, it's like, how old am I? 35. It's like 20 some odd years in the making, pretty much. I started training myself in my house. I was going to say in my basement, but really it was wherever I had dumbbells. But it was like the whole like 5 pound dumbbells thing for your birthday or whatever. Like I was 12 years old. I started doing stuff just to try to improve my own body image. And it was just sort of like doing what every kid or what you, when you know nothing, you just know what you're going to do. You're going to train arms, you're going to do some dumbbell flies, and you do a bunch of abs because you have no idea what's happening, right? So extrapolate that all the way through, like through grade school. I was lucky enough that I was a good enough kid, straight and narrow, and I'd not keep my nose clean. And then I got access to, even in like junior high school, the weight rooms. So I got to a little bit more exposure to like real equipment, real weights, real machines. And kept sort of just plugging away, doing, again, the most bro-y stuff possible because I had no idea what I was doing, but I at least had more access to things. And then we got to the point where it's time to graduate. And hey, what do you want to do with the rest of your life? And I had no idea, but it was probably going to university. I had the opportunity to do so, and nothing really popped me aside from kinesiology. So, all right, I can at least use this degree to hopefully learn some stuff about the thing I care the most about, which is improving my body composition or improving my body image. So let's go ahead and do that. So we took all of Ken, got to a real big boy facility in the actual university level of gym. And that's where I started to really tease out, okay, what is a split? What is more than just chest and arms? And like digging through and doing probably what a lot of people have experienced in their life. When you discover you have a back that can be trained or legs that can be trained, going and doing every available machine or exercise that you can conceptualize for that muscle group every time you hit it. And it really ties in nicely actually to exercising with intent, because the intent was literally just to get yoked. And I'm like, well, more is better. Clearly, if there's another machine, that means it's probably hitting something different, which isn't always the case. But young me, even at the university level with ignorance everywhere, my leg workouts would be like 27 exercises or something absurd, like 2 to 3 hours. As again, I'm probably not even saying anything too outside of the ordinary for people at that age bracket, right? Like their experience bracket. But I did that, and then slowly but surely got out of it, became a personal trainer because that was the natural sort of arc or crescendo to the degree. Got in the field, and then really had my knowledge tested. And I think like a lot of people, especially if you go through the academic space as your avenue to getting into, say, something like personal training or coaching, people think the Dunning-Kruger effect only takes place on social media these days. Dunning-Kruger is hard in new grads, like especially undergrads that come out of the space with like a kinesiology degree. thinking they know everything and there's no gaps in their knowledge. They can see it all, know it all. No, you step in front of your first person and either you're ignorant and you just, think you're still hot shit, or you are not paralyzed, but you're like, oh God, I actually don't know anything because this is a real human with real problems and I have to formulate real strategies. So that's kind of where I got into the space and start to really challenge my own understanding and really start to dig in more and more across different avenues, be it getting back into academics to further my kinesiology understanding, but also just expanding into just all media like YouTube. I'm trying to think of what was available at the time because that was a long time ago, but it's primarily YouTube. Instagram was kind of coming around, but primarily YouTube and getting to things that where people use TikTok or Instagram now to find like influencers or people that are prominent in the space. Following that, bodybuilding.com, the whole thing, and really broadening my horizons. And just over the years, being a trainer and getting exposed to things like Prescript or just different people of different walks of life, different clinical levels of experience and things of that nature, it exposed me further and further to I have a great principled understanding of how these adaptations work, but I don't understand training. And that's where the real takeoff of my career started to happen, is when I started to realize that it's not as simple as just follow the mechanism all the time. It's how do I interact with a human that's in front of me and take those principles and mold it to what the person's expressed needs are. So yeah, that's where we landed with Prescript. We landed with the Prescript Collective and continued education and trying to help glean that experience or from that point on. Here's how you take the things that you either learn in school, the things you've learned in courses, and actually apply them to a real human, aka, as today's topic kind of will naturally sort of flow into, how do we exercise with intent? How do we take the things that we know and then apply them with intent to a person's either individual workout within the confines of a full program or whatever their needs may be?
So, what was your most influential point in your career when it came to knowing that you wanted to get into education? Because I mean, obviously, it sounds like you were always very curious and you had this desire to want to learn more about training in general, which obviously led you to, doing more education. But what was that point where you knew that you wanted to teach?
I think it was so I graduated with my original kin degree back in 2011 and started working probably within 6 months. I was working as a full-time trainer and I thought I knew everything and then got into the field and got exposed for I could help people for sure. Don't get me wrong. Like it wasn't like I was just like a baby deer on ice and not able to do anything. But something that really stands out to me, and it didn't at the time, but now looking back, it's one of those moments where like you wish you can go back in time and like apologize to a former client for your ignorance. But probably 55 to 60-year-old lady, next to no muscle mass to speak of, tons of upper body, just like nowadays, like at the time you would just blanket call everything impingements. Now it's like anterior compression, blah, 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 like blah, 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 all the things. Not training in scapular or in the scapular plane, things like that. All those kind of things were happening. But I remember being like, okay, in your program, we have machine lateral raise, a very unforgiving positional exercise if they have movement restrictions. And she was like, yeah, it feels like clicky, kind of painful, sharp every once in a while. I'm like, well, sometimes, literally, like sometimes it be that way. Like, sometimes training hurts.
It'd be like that
Just
sometimes.
Plowing straight through it because I didn't know enough at the time, right? So I went back to school. The original reason was literally because I had burnt out, and I did want to augment my ability to help people. So I got my nutrition degree and eventually a master's in kin to follow it up. But I really had burnt myself out in the efforts to establish myself as a trainer. But in going back to school after having about 2 years of experience beyond that point now, that's what returning to baseline, like returning to where people learn about this stuff at the start, that's where I was like, oh, you guys are this in the same position I was. You know a ton of educational, like textbook level facts, but you don't know how to apply them in real time to a real human or how to mold those facts to be applicable in the moment, right? And then it got even worse, it like double or tripled down when I spent even more time, because when I was in school, I was still training myself and I was still training others and still learning about how to better improve my skills. But I was also getting like a master's level degree. I was learning about the scientific process. I was learning about kinesiology, like research. And so all of those things were like a pressure cooker for improving my skills, yes, as a trainer, but also my ability to learn and then make modifications to my own practice in real time. seeing red flags and kind of knowing how to like pivot or call an audible. And so the second time I left school and went back to being a full-time trainer, the gap between experience and the gap between knowledge, it wasn't just like I have a degree, but I'm a first year trainer, like a kin degree, walking into like a your box gym for the first time, and everybody else is not just a trainer, but I have a degree. I had the opportunity to get a degree, right? This time it was I have an academic pedigree that most people don't have the opportunity to pursue. That's amazing. But I also have like 5 years under my belt of training real people. And the gap of like a new trainer just getting started versus what I could see from a mile away, or the warning signs, red flags of how either they were trying to train people or what they thought was a fact or what they thought like they heard online. That gap was so enormous that it was almost frustration. It was like, are you guys, are you seeing this shit? Like, is this for real? Like, what is happening? And so it just, when you work in a box gym, there's different camps. Some people treat like training, like being a trainer, like it's a team. Like you work on a team of individuals and stuff like that. Others, it's more you're isolated. Like I am my own person. I am my own trainer, whatever it might be. But in a box gym, no matter what, we're all wearing the same uniform, and the general public views us as staff at a gym. We are all effectively the same person to the average person going through a gym. So my degree, my experience, my efficacy on the floor washed away if the trainer next to me was doing borderline dangerous things, ineffective things, whatever, right? So it was almost like, are you seeing this shit coupled with I need to at least raise the standard of those in my immediate proximity by virtue of making sure that they didn't do something like the guilt of like if they pulled some shit out of pure ignorance, like to their credit, it's not like not malicious, but out of ignorance and either didn't like wasted someone's time or money or got someone hurt. I'm like, I can't have that. So that's when I just started to effectively volunteer my time and do training and development of my own volition. Just here's what I know. Here's my experiences. If you guys want to know anything, this is the topic I'm going to cover at this time. Let's just go hang out for an hour and we'll break this down.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I think it's a similar story for both of us too. I think like for a long time I wasn't maybe super into the idea of education, but I think the more that I learned, the more that I experienced, the more that I worked with different people at different gyms, for me it was like the aha moments with people. Like you'd be expressing something and they're like, "Oh, that makes sense." Or hey, like they'd have a client issue, we talk about it and they'd be like, "Oh, that actually worked." And I'm like, "Well, yeah, like they think about the concepts or the nuance or the theory, and then you're just trying to apply it all, and then they take that with them. Maybe they experience a similar issue, they run through that again, or even for them themselves, if they had a current problem, we can navigate through it, work through it, and just continue adding to their arsenal, to their belt. Like it's just for me, I think it was very similar in that I had seen a lot of people prescribing things that shouldn't have been prescribed. You're seeing movements that people are nowhere near ready for, nowhere near have the capacity for, and also bad cueing and coaching. And I was like, oh, big yikes. Yeah, that can't be a thing. So I think, like, again, it's just a matter of, again, going into what you're passionate about too. But then also, the more that you do it, I feel like the more you tend to build onto that skill. And then also, the better you get at it too, right? And all of a sudden, you're in the position that you're in, where you're teaching more as like a full-time thing, or you're at least still running these in-house T&Ds, or you're running these in-house seminars for people to learn from and to further develop their own skills. So either way, it's a win-win, right? I think you're still adding to their tools regardless. So being in the industry yourself for over a decade, what are some of the biggest issues that you tend to see when it comes to intention and execution of anything? And this could be, oh man, exercises themselves. This could be programming. This could be anything, just anything to do with the training realm.
I think it's I don't think shiny object syndrome is the right phrase for it, but I guess what I'm trying to articulate is something works and then people will get overly attached to exactly what they did, but then start to lose the forest for the trees. Now let me explain what that means. One of our friends, Stu Locke, is a good example. He just posted recently on his social media, I think it was like an upper back warm up. It was just okay. If you're struggling to feel or use your back in your bench setup, Simple fix. Just grab a mini band, underhand band pull aparts, sets of 20, like three sets. I'm paraphrasing and I'm not ex saying exactly what it is, but effectively just like a billion reps until your back explodes, and then go do it. He's building proprioceptive awareness of a lot of the back musculature. Sweet. And what I'll see oftentimes, and this is from my own experience within my own training as well, the first time you do it, oh my God, this is amazing. I actually have a back that does back things on my bench. It's helping to stabilize. I feel fantastic. I'm able to lock in, and this session was amazing. And then instead of chasing the end state of my back feels fired up, I have a pump in the right places, whatever the thing that was causing the benefit was, it's an attachment to, well, 3 by 20 should get me there. And then you aimlessly just plow through like three sets of 20 or whatever it might be, and then you leap straight into the working sets or the workout of the day, having not actually accomplished the intent of the warm up. It may have been prescribed as, let's just do a bunch of mini band underhand pull aparts to fire up your upper back, but the key end state was you have a fired up upper back. The same can be said. People ha struggle with hip internal rotation or just hip stability broadly, like all of us do. You and I are currently seated in chairs speaking for up to an hour in time. When we stand up, our abdominals and our pelvises and our hip musculature have not had to support themselves for that amount of time. And they're probably just like, I'm going to say the word, they're asleep. If we were to try to squat or deadlift, something like that, there's a good chance we're not going to have all of our ducks in a row. Like if we just got up out of the chair and did it, right? So things like, any name your favorite hip internal rotation stability drill. Could be a B stance RDL, could be any split squat variation of any denomination to help the person with their needs. Could be the old B stance landmine contralateral RDL, the Jordan Junta special. All of those things likely have, again, a similar end result that you're driving towards at the level of the hip. It feels you're able to get full excursion through like hip internal and external rotation. You're able to get your center of mass back, and it probably feels like you're actually working your glute, maybe glute max in a certain capacity, but definitely your glute med. You're feeling a lateral hip shift. All of those things in my brain now are what I'm striving towards. I almost don't even count sets and reps at all anymore. It's mostly because when I do that, I subconsciously chase sets and reps, when the reality is what I need is a stable hip and a mobile hip. So if I'm going to do, in this example, a B stance RDL, a split squat variation, I'm essentially doing it with as much focus and intent on moving through my hip, maybe eccentrically pulling myself down with my glute, whatever my cueing system needs to be, to get that end feeling of I'm able to get into end range motion in a stable way with this hip, and I probably have a pump in my glutes. Like there's things now that I ascribe the direct intent of this choice is to prepare me for, say, a squat or a deadlift. And I know the criteria that deems me quote unquote prepared, sensationally even, feels like this. If I don't feel like this before I'm done my warm up is not done. And it's just attaching those kind of end state goals, those intentions behind what you're doing, because it's easy for someone to prescribe and then get attached to, okay, if I just simply do three sets of 10 on my B stance RDL, all of a sudden I have done my movement prep and I'm ready to go. But are you actually physically prepared for the task at hand? So that's a big one, is the conflation of here's what the program says, here's what I should get out of this end result versus what is the actual reality of going through that process.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I think that comes down to the nuance of what is the intention of the warm up, or what is the intention of the primary movement in that workout too, right? And like you said too, are you just basing it solely off of like a stimulus thing? Or are you basing it off of the fact that, like, for the pull apart example, right? Okay, well, now I feel my back, right? Which can be a great learning tool, but like, again, people get married to the idea that they'd have to do like 3 by 20 band and pull aparts forever. It's like, well, no, the whole idea of these pull aparts is to get some upper back engagement, right? So you could have that in many different ways. It doesn't have to be technically 3 by 20 pull aparts, but in a busy commercial space, for example, where maybe you don't have access to cables, you don't have access to machines all the time, or you don't have access to dumbbells, maybe a pull apart is going to be your best option because you can quickly just pull out of your backpack or your bag. You could do your three sets of 20 and then immediately jump into your bench. That way you're not trying to like run around the gym and be that guy that's like, hey, no, I'm using that. I'm using that, I'm using that, I'm using that. Or you're spending like 30 minutes warming up when really, like, you should just be doing one, maybe two things before you even start and run it with that too. So From what I'm gathering from you with this too, would you say that the issue is more or less the ability to auto-regulate? Like, either to give context to that, either extend a warm-up if you feel like maybe you had a more sedentary day, or you had a day before prior that was more sedentary where you didn't get as much movement in. So maybe you are extending said warm-up to actually get into a state where you're ready to actually train and handle the workout, or maybe you have more of an active day. And you're scaling back what you're doing, possibly even taking something out and then getting to your primary work.
It's an excellent point because you can apply that same premise or that same question to even the actual working exercises of the day. So it could be for strength, hypertrophy, it doesn't really matter. But if you're fired up, you're good to go. The hip internal rotation example case, for example, that could be like one or two sets of a really solidly executed, properly loaded B stance, anything, split squat. Like mine has in historically, so I have had SI issues before just because I'm either through training, through sleeping positions, which is hilarious because that just says how old I am. But at the beginning of correcting them, it'll start much higher repetition to get to that end state that I'm looking for. It could be like literally, yeah, like three sets of 12 to 15 per side. Now, in its more recovered state, yeah, I'm going to grab my dumbbells at home. It's going to be much heav more heavier load. And then we're going to do like one to two sets of like 8 to 10, and we'll be at that end state of what we need. And the same could be said, like I was referring to with repetition ranges on, say, a working set of any sort of thing, like hypertrophy, strength. Strength, you probably want to be a little bit more tactical about it just so you don't overrun yourself. But hypertrophy, you walk in, you're bagged one day, and maybe your ability to externally stay, excuse me, internally stabilize is kind of compromised because of either mental or physical fatigue. Maybe you sit down on a machine, but even still, your ability to like your mental drive to hit failure with like a set of 6 to 8, it's not there. So maybe you choose a load that you can do it with 8 to 10 to 12, something like that. It's the same end result that you're driving towards for a normalization of most results. It's proximity to genuine muscle failure in the area you care about, but you can be more fluid than, okay, it has to be 3 sets of 8 or 3 sets of 10, 3 sets of 12. So the same thing about auto-regulation with, say, getting ready for an actual movement, you know the end state of preparedness that you're driving towards. Sometimes it might take more time, more sets, more reps to mentally tune yourself in, get your execution down, and physically stimulate the area you need in the way that you need. The same could be said, like I was referring to, let's say a hypertrophy adaptation where you know the end result you're driving towards is just straight up proximity to failure. That could be done with a plethora of repetition ranges, but the idea is that you're scaling to what you're able to actually perform that day.
Yeah, I know that totally makes sense. So would you say that the biggest issue then is likely a lack of understanding of the said prescription of like a warm-up movement or multiple movements? So I guess in turn, probably the lack would be the understanding of the movement mechanics or the movement patterns that are required to do said movement or even the skill required to do so.
Yeah, I think that in the preparation side of things, exactly that. It's a lack of understanding of what is the actual end goal of this exercise in terms of preparing me. Like, what do I need it to do to prepare me? But also, how do I execute this properly in order to achieve that preparation? So, like something like a split squat, this is probably one of the most notorious exercises for it. You just crash and burn. You just drop into the bottom and come back up without any sort of consideration for rib cage over pelvis stack, matching your shin angle, or any number of things that's going to allow you better access to actual true hip internal rotation that's going to drive the benefit that you want. Getting into something like actual like A1 workout of the day, exercise of the day, a big component of it is people get addicted to or distracted by either the phrase progressive overload or the idea that to make progress, something has to increase workout over workout every single time. So more of like a imperial change on your spreadsheet or on your logbook. Number must go up for more gains to have happened. Which, if you really break down all the math, it probably does over the longest of the long term of your training. But the real stimulus for something like a hypertrophy and even something like strength, again, like don't take the strength thing too far because there's other variables that will make you crash and burn if you just chase proximity to failure with strength all the time. But getting close enough to technical failure, like a clean, safe level of failure in most things, is the thing that's going to stimulate your adaptation from like an actual workout, excuse me, exercise of the day perspective. It's not the warm up, it's your actual meat and potatoes. Getting whatever tissue you're targeting for a hypertrophy standpoint close to failure through whatever means, that's the real thing that's stimulating you. It's not necessarily this set and repetition scheme, this load per se. It's the combination of those things that gets your muscle close to failure that actually is the thing that stimulates the change. So from a warm-up perspective, understanding the end goal that you're trying to achieve to change your ability to exercise or to improve your ability to exercise. So it's not even the set and rep schemes. They're all just vehicles to get you to an improved state for exercise that's going to come. And then in the actual workouts themselves, knowing what stimulus truly is. And it's not 3 by 10 at insert whatever load on a spreadsheet. And then the next day, 3 by 12 necessarily. It's I could not perform one more repetition safely or with clean execution. That's the stimulus. And it could be less today than it was yesterday. I guess probably don't train 2 days in a row, the same thing, but it could be less today than it was last week. And at the very least, that's a maintenance value, right? Like driving towards that same end state, proximity to failure will be the normalization. But people are addicted to forward progress, quote unquote, by virtue of just numerical changes on a spreadsheet.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think people, like you said, are married to the idea that you have to see the needle trend forward, right? And I think in this sense, it's like relating to the fact of progressive overload. And I think people need to understand progressive overload, there's so many components to it, right? It could be an increase in volume, it could be a increase in awareness and positioning, it could be an increase through a certain range of motion, it could be a control aspect as well. You know, it could be a lot of components. So I think it's just a matter of like understanding that just because you didn't get your split squats or your B stance or whatever to, you know, your new 3 by 10 this week, it doesn't mean that you failed per se. It's just a matter of, okay, well, like understanding what were the hindering factors that were preventing you from performing as you did last week or preventing you from being able to actually push that needle forward. And that just creates more awareness for the lifter, for a coach too, right? It can make them understand, okay, well, this requires more opportunity and more engagement into honing on something as a coach for the client or for the individual too.
Yeah, there's a phrase in Prescript that they've like shallow introduced and we've all adopted where it's progressive overstimulus rather than progressive overload. And it's because there's a hyperfixation with the affix of load or the part of the word of load when it's a singular word. It's overload. It's not load per se. It's not only the progression metric is not just adding weight. That's not the thing, but people will see that and hyperfixate on it, not realizing that overload as a word just means the target tissue, the skill, the whatever it is, has been given a greater challenge than it can overcome over the course of the workout. That can come from less rest. Heaven forbid people take less rest. Probably don't do that. But more reps, more sets, more load in some like different tempo. As you said, refined skill, making your technique just more effective. Progressive overload is the improvement in the challenge you're able to overcome workout over workout, but you're still reaching an end state of a state of fatigue. Whereas again, people hyperfixate on overload, basically just only load being the only way to look at it. So progressive overstimulus is one way to refine your understanding of it. Overload as a single word, not a disjoint word that is over hyphen load. It's one word that can have many different approaches to getting there.
Yeah, no, I like the prescript like overstimulus thing. I think that makes sense too, because end of the day, there's so many components to it, like we just discussed. And I think it's important to understand that as a newer coach or even as like a newer person to lifting too, that if you have an off week, it's not like you are like immediately failing or that you're not moving forward. It's just a matter of like evaluating and seeing what the hindering aspects are to it and then working on those things, right? Maybe it's an external thing. Maybe it's stress, maybe it's sleep, maybe it's a nutrition related thing, hydration related things. So it's good to be able to identify those things and then improve upon that. So what would you say are some things that people can do to ultimately exercise with more intent and progress more in what they're trying to accomplish? I think there's obviously quite a large gap here. And I'm sure you've seen it a lot on the internet as well. So I guess my first question for you within this question would just be, what do you think the biggest gap is? And how should we, or how could somebody go about broadening said, or I guess widening said gap?
Yeah, I think maturity is the big one. Like, and it's not a fun answer for people, but like maturing in the gym, quote unquote, is realizing that your goal is not necessarily going to be attained by the thing that you think it's going to be attained by. So, and this is my own maturing process coming out in this answer, basically, but being honest with what you're trying to accomplish. And being honest with if you just have pet exercises or pet sensations during training that you are not willing to give up in order to get there. So what I mean by that is actually real easy. Hack squats, leg presses, barbell squats. Three very fun options that people like to load up and like send it and like make sure that's the centerpiece, that's the cornerstone of their training, right? I would argue that you can probably see a tremendous amount of growth in all the similar areas that those exercises or those machine-based exercises or even barbells would elicit if you got a heavy, like if you went for lifetime PRs in Bulgarian split squats. And in terms of being able to accomplish that, you'll probably address many of the underlying issues with all of people's training. So being extremely proficient at a Bulgarian split squat, heavy double dumbbells, one per hand, hundos per hand plus, depending on where your strength lies. 50s per, who cares, right? But like getting heavy, getting good at them. Probably going to shore up a whole lot of ribcage over pelvis mechanics and core bracing mechanics, the ability to maintain a rigid torso, probably going to shore up a lot of grip issues, lung issues, like literally just training your cardio with split squats, building the same amount of tissue. And if you get good enough, you can safely probably approximate failure in a unilateral exercise that also elongates the length of time you can suffer with that exercise because it's unilateral and not bilateral. Like one leg is doing the same work with both the dumbbells as in a squat pattern, like proper with both feet on the ground or a machine version. But it sucks. And people get addicted to the thrill of a heavy barbell or like having a nosebleed on a hack squat. It's more fun. It's what you enjoy the most about training. And for those that don't know me, I am the biggest advocate for enjoyment within training. But typically speaking, there's got to be something like the veggies have to be mixed in with the spaghetti sauce and basically aligning better with what your needs are and your wants are and making sure your needs are met before your wants. That's a huge thing with training. And then also being the second prong of that, it's something that I've been very vocal about recently as well, but and maybe it is just top of mind because I wrote to it today, but having a reasonable and founded in reality understanding of what your body, what your performance, and what your progress actually looks like. Because it's very common in the industry now. For coaches, and I advocate for this, coaches should be very metric orientated. You, as a coach, should track as much as you can for data collection so you know how to make the proper decisions for your client. The presentation of certain things to a client at all times, could be scale weight, it could be like the graphs that come off of that, it could be having them take progress photos ad nauseum, like week over week, it could be taking their measurements, certain things like that. That distract from the actual progress they might be making, like them less tangible, because those things are all very physical. They're very empirical. You can write them down. You can see them. I lost this amount of size per arm. Like my arms, my bat wings are decreasing by virtue of like a quarter inch per side. Got it. But do you like what you see? Do you even know what you like? Are you able to visually appreciate your progress? Can you understand that gaining 50 pounds on your squat, even if it was like a 95 pound squat to whatever 50 pounds, 145, whatever my math can't do, my brain can't do math right now, but whatever that might be, can you appreciate that change over time? Or is it you're so attached to how fast or whatever the numbers happen to be, the change or whatever they happen to be, that you're robbing yourself from the actual enjoyment of the genuine progress that you're making. So the big one is obviously the physique, the visuals, because our industry is so saturated with either before and after photos, and this is not a new thing, it's been around forever, but before and after photos, stage competitions, photo shoots, the most glamorized, like peaked out human physique possible. when it makes the average person who thinks that that's the norm for how training works or how tracking works or what you're supposed to be driving towards, it makes them not understand what a, I'm going to say normal, and that encompasses everybody. That doesn't encompass like you're a civilian in the space, you're a normie. It means competitors too. But what a real body looks like under relaxed conditions, under certain body fat, under certain less body fat, as you're changing, as you're developing muscle mass, people have lost track of what it actually looks like. And they've lost track and they've lost a reasonable expectation of what quote unquote good is in their own head. If you're not a stage lean competitor year round, you somehow look poor. Like fluffy, that's a disgusting term. I think it's dumb, but that kind of an idea. So robbing oneself of the joy of their own progress or feeling good about their body because, say, my calipers didn't change this week. It's like, do you give a shit what the caliper reads if you look in the mirror and you like what you see, but then you like what you see and then the caliper didn't change, so now you feel bad about what you see. That's the thing. So the double prong here is maturing in the gym and training certain things that are probably the best for you before you go after things that you really enjoy the most, not taking away what you enjoy the most, but prioritizing what you need. And then having an understanding of like, what does your goal really look like versus are you getting overly obsessed with a numerical representation that doesn't actually change how you feel about yourself, aside from making you feel bad when something that doesn't even need to change necessarily didn't change.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot within that too. Like, I think it's a matter of figuring out, like you mentioned, what your goals are and what your values actually align with. And I think that ties in directly to your ego. And I think the ego is something that drives a lot of people to want to do nosebleed hack squat sets, to do heavy bench press, heavy deadlifts. And I know because I've been there. You know, I've thought, okay, well, maybe I don't have this in me today, but I'm going to try. Or it's like, well, I want to lift this weight, not for myself, but for people around me. And because I could post it on Instagram and get likes. So it's one of those things that definitely, I think, drives a lot of people's decision-making processes with, like, just again, giving them things that they think they should be doing versus what they should actually be doing. Like you said, oftentimes the things that they should be doing aren't sexy. It's like Bulgarian split squat is not sexy by nature by any means. And it's very mentally challenging. It's very mentally tough and it's going to be hard. But like you said, too, just with the amount of ROI that you can get from that one specific movement versus the many things that you'd be needing to do instead of that, it's almost not really going to be worth it, right? So I think it is a matter of, again, picking things that are more tailored to you specifically, but also, like you mentioned, doing things that you don't necessarily want to do, but getting to a certain level of proficiency and skill at them to the point where you are out of that like newbie process with the movement where you are actually getting kind of good at it, seeing progress, and you're getting what you want out of it versus just doing things for the hell of doing things just because you saw some jacked dude on Instagram doing it. Or on the opposite end of it too, just doing things for the sake of doing things based off of preference because there has to be some specificity within the programming, and it has to relay to said person's goals or their ambitions within the gym, I think, too. There's a lot to that. And I think it's just, again, it's something that I wanted to talk to you about because, I mean, you've been in the space forever. And even for me, too, like I've been in the space now for coming up on 6 years. And I do think that a big component of it is just, again, a lack of understanding, but I think a lot of it too is driven from social pressure, but also from these arbitrary expectations that we tend to put in our heads, right? When we get into fitness, when really fitness is about improving these pillars of your life, improving these aspects of your life. But I think we tend to get caught in these physical changes, which drives ego, which changes us to our core. And we lose sight of the actual reason we got into fitness, which I think it's important to, like you mentioned, regularly goal set too. I think that's like a really good thing to talk about with your coach or even figure out on your own too. It's like, okay, well, what do I actually want? And if you feel like there's a bit of a detachment or if you feel like there's like a bit of a gap, it's like, hey, like let's bring myself back and figure out like what I'm actually wanting to work towards. And that'll give you or your coach way more clarity of what they should actually be giving you because you yourself actually know what you're trying to work towards.
Yeah, I posed the question to his name is James Mack for your listeners. He's a pre-script coach as well, he's a good friend of mine. But he's very much so involved in the bodybuilding space, specifically it's called FMG now, but it's a very it's a in his workspace, it's a very female dominated space. It doesn't really have that's kind of actually an irrelevant point. It could be male, it doesn't really matter. But if I posed the question to him, and I was like, if you were to line up the top 10 of any division, like in the world even, could you, as a high level coach in this space, pick out the training program, the exercise protocols, or what any of that? Can you just by visually looking at someone be able to do that? And it's like, no. So immediately, this is back in the era of Optimality when it was dominating the space. And I was like, okay, so clearly you can pull a thread of something that is probably arbitrarily or objectively true, but in actual application doesn't make a tremendous amount of practical difference. But then you can extend that concept to people's physiques and the delineation of good, bad, because like the intent of, say, in this example of bodybuilding, or it's do are you pursuing a physique that you want, or are you pursuing a physique that will get you a pro card that will fill a judge's criteria? Because a lot of the times people grapple with dysmorphia, they'll grapple with self-worth in these spaces, just bodybuilding broadly. And it's like, objectively, from the standpoint of the general public, of everybody in your life, you look fantastic. You absolutely look tremendous in all phases. It could be you're in your build phase, you could be cutting, you'd be in competition. You look ludicrously good because you train and you eat well, as literally effectively a job, right? But they've lost track of that because compared to the end goal of what they're training for, a pro card, if not getting pro card, a lot of people struggle with the fact that they can't associate their physique with being good yet. Like it's not pro card worthy, it's not winning this competition worthy, therefore it's not good. And it's like, from an outsider's perspective looking in, male, female doesn't matter. Like, people that get on stage look tremendous. People that work out look tremendous. It's as you were saying, like, what did you get into this for? And do you have a calibration on where you started versus where you're going? Do you have an appreciation for the progress, for the physique, for the numbers in the gym that you're actually finding? Or is it until this arbitrary landmark has been passed, you do not associate? Again, it's very, very much actually ties into the idea of intent, of like, what is the intent of your training? But have you lost the forest for the trees? Do you not actually appreciate the vessel that you have and how it looks, and how it looks compared to other people? Not that you really need to. Like, is that comparison to other people the thing that dominates you? Or is it, if you were to put yourself in isolation and just arbitrarily, like, objectively look at your physique, do you know that you look good, or have you been so far removed from what every other non-competitor looks like, every other human looks like? What does a normal body look like in competition, out of competition, that you've lost track of that?
Yeah, I think I mean, I don't blame anybody for this either, because I think social media is great in lots of ways, but I do think it is the double-edged sword that lots of people experience too, because again, it's allowed me, for example, right, to make a lot of connections. It's allowed me to network with a lot of people. And again, it's allowed me to really broaden my reach, right? But I do think within that too, it has brought upon or made evident, I wouldn't say brought upon, made evident, maybe certain body image issues, or it has brought on certain issues that I've experienced with body dysmorphia, even a little bit of like a question of self-worth just by like, again, putting content out. So I do think that it's really important to, within your journey, right, trying to often reflect upon it and just be like, okay, well, what have I actually accomplished thus far? And this can be like quite small in theory, but it is really taking a larger approach and being like, okay, well, what has happened in the process? Because I think a lot of us tend to be very outcome focused. And they're like, okay, well, I envision myself being in this place at this point in time, right? But it's like a matter of thinking, okay, well, what have I actually done from when I started training to now? And this doesn't just apply for training, it applies for everything. But in the sense of training, it's like, okay, well, what have I actually done from point A to point B? And taking some time to like reflect upon that, like you said too, it's like, to your average person, if they see anybody that like regularly works out, that eats healthy and isn't, is actually trying to live like more of an active lifestyle, you're gonna look really good. But then when like all of a sudden there's this disconnect, or there's all of a sudden there's this immediate judgment that we tend to give ourselves as soon as we post it online, because like there's this fleet of comparison, and there's this fleet of just like, again, thinking that you don't look as good as somebody else because they posted something recently where they were like deep in prep. Maybe they just competed They are pumped up after, they took in a lot of food after a comp, and they're looking super full but still super lean. And it's like, okay, well, a lot of it just comes down to perspective, but also just looking at like, okay, well, what have you actually accomplished? And does that still align with your mission? Like, does that still align with what you want to accomplish? And if it doesn't, that's okay. A lot of us are going to change and grow over time, and like that's going to be like the natural ebbs and flows, right? Maybe when you first started, it was for very, like multiple various like vanity reasons, but as time goes on, maybe you're finding, okay, well, now it's more orientated towards quality of life, towards not feeling like shit when I train, towards not having recurring knee or shoulder issues. And it's like, okay, maybe for you, it's like, I'm a dad. I just want to look kind of good when I'm with my kid. And it's like, okay, well, again, these are just going to be the natural ebbs and flows you're going to have to work through. And I think the whole point of this is like learn to really enjoy the process too. It's like it's so important to take a step back sometimes and think about like how far you've come, right? Like think about how consistent you've been with the gym. And if you're not where you want to be, that's kind of motivating and inspiring to push a little bit further and think about where you want to be and setting actionable steps to get to said goal.
Yeah, it really comes back down to you use the phrase perspective, but back to sort of as a trainer, putting back the trainer hat on, like, what is fitness? Well, fitness is not dying early from non-communicable diseases. So diabetes, heart disease, preventable things through health and wellness. And then ideally not being in pain and, having some physical attributes that allow you to interact with your environment a little bit easier, being strong enough to pick things up. Not having like the lungs of a COPD patient when you're just the average person, stuff like that. Anything beyond that, that's a performance goal. So if you're above that threshold, you're already winning. And again, it comes down to perspective and like forgetting that. Like even in the throes of my lack of sleep and loss of gains temporarily, I was like, well, I can always still like do this level of cardio. I can always still lift this weight. Like I'm still winning, even though it's not maybe the peak conditioning I've ever had. And it's because I've learned that A, it comes back in short order, but B, like where and why did I get started and have I accomplished that or maintained that? And then everything is just beyond that, it's all training. As you said, like if you've lost it, if you're not there yet, if anything, like, well, that's a training goal that you can then shoot for. It actually organizes your effort once again. So it's nothing's ever bad. It's a matter of understanding, as you phrased it, like where you are, where you're going, how far you've come, and then taking a moment to actually appreciate all that.
So this is a little bit, I didn't have this question planned, but as a newer dad still, how did you yourself find that you were able to shift the focus? Because I know for you, obviously, like fitness is probably one of those things that was very life encompassing, and it was one of those things that you were very heavily focused on. And like, I think everybody that's good at something is a little bit obsessed over it at some point to some degree. I think that's required. But for when you had a child and when there was that mandatory, priority shift, how did you go about doing that? And that's a different question I probably never actually even asked you before. But to me, I'm just curious because I feel like for most people, major shifts like that can really derail someone, or they can go through this huge episode of like self-doubt, self-worth. They don't look how they used to look, and it can be very discouraging. So if you could shed some light on that, I think that'd be really helpful.
So I've got the advantage that I've been training, like we led the conversation. I've been training for like 12, 35, was that like 20 some odd years? Yeah, that sounds about right. So I've got a lot of equity built into my body already. So my baseline cardio, my baseline muscularity now, stuff like that. It's very ingrained. Like my walk around weight, like if right before my son was born, I was probably the actual biggest that I've been and the leanest that I've been, probably walking around 220. Around when he was born, like, or after, right after he was born, I probably didn't train for about 2 weeks, maybe 10 days, 2 weeks. And diet was sideways, everything's sideways because it's chaos. We had a tumultuous sort of birthing experience, the whole thing, right? So I think I dropped to like maybe 208. I was like not an insignificant drop, right? But I'd basically been preparing for this my entire life in some capacity. Like I kind of knew A about whether the phrase triggers people or not, like muscle memory, like, or at least like habit memory, like being able to get back on the horse and like have faith that like if I just get back in these habits, it'll all come back relatively fast. But I also had things lined up in my like in my life that were kind of fail safes. So I have a gym at home. Sec, decline that. Sorry, I was getting a call. I have a gym in my house that has like baseline stuff. I have barbells, I have dumbbells, I have an assault bike. And even still, and to validate other people that might be going through difficult times, like, yo, I still didn't have the ability to really do them that frequently because life is chaos with a newborn. But I had these fail safes where I could at least once a week maybe go and hit a maintenance value. And same as knowing that it'll come back relatively quick enough, I also knew that if you train to a maintenance value, it takes significantly less time and effort to actually do that. So I had these things that were kind of keeping me sane. But there's an overwhelming shift in priorities that you were referencing where it's like you kind of don't care until you get time to breathe. And then when you get time to breathe, you're like, oh, wow, well, I, relative to my prior physique, I look sloppy. And it's like, eh. Again, the psychological equity is all the same as the physical equity. It's like, yeah, it's fine. Like it's the same as when we all got laid off as trainers for during the pandemic. And I was like, you know what? I'm not doing band pull-aparts times 10,000 to try to maintain muscle mass with not a gym. I'm just going to be sedentary for like a couple weeks to months or whatever for the first time in my life and enjoy it. I didn't really fret it. But then on the comeback, so I did enough to maintain general health and wellness. That's fine because I have like 2 to 3 workouts per week, minimal time. Got it. As he got older and as we found our groove, it was just a massively fluid and evolving process. My split and my training schedule changed like almost weekly. Like the extent to which I was like, all right, I'm excited. I got this new split next week. Well, that didn't work at all. Because insert sleep regression, or my wife needs to be prioritized more than me, which she always did and always will. Like I have to make sure she trains more than me because she's more of a physical caregiver, both in terms of like nourishment, but also she just needs to be able to manage herself way more than me at this time of our lives. So she's going to get prioritized. So it was just such a shell game using all the principles that I ever learned about maintenance, about stimulus, about recovery, just a shell game. And then as he gets older and older to where he is now, we're 14 months deep. And now I have like a probably a fairly solid routine reestablished. Everything's back. I think I'm maybe like 2 to 3 pounds lighter and I just don't care because I'm not tracking anything. I'm just eating like consistently. But it was basically just an acknowledgement of what this is and knowing that it was a voluntary thing. We planned this child. It wasn't like an oopsie or like a life event that just randomly occurred that derailed my training. It was like, this is the new priority. So all of those things mixed together, like I kind of knew how to make the best of it. I did it with intention. Like it wasn't like it came out of nowhere. And then it's relatively speaking, short-lived. Kiddo's growing up. He's having a more stable routine. Wife's back to work. My routine's sort of fleshing itself out. I'm finding how much I can push in terms of work, life balance, the whole thing. And now I get to train maybe 5 to 6 days a week again. It's different. It's like 6 in the morning before the world is awake. It's I do my work from 4 to 6 and then train 6 to 7 and then I'm back to being a dad full time. But it's there. And I still, again, I mesh all of the mechanisms and principles I've ever learned to make it effective. And the split is different. It's for what my needs are now. It's drawing on the maturity of exercise selection and what my needs are as well. Like the split squat or the B stance RDLs as the example from previously in the conversation. I view those as mandatory and a component of my hypertrophy training. For those that don't know, I primarily train for that as like my personal goals. Like I care about just looking good and feeling good. But where a hack squat, a leg press, squat, maybe walking lunges or different iterations would formerly be the addiction that I had. Like I must hack squat for leg size or else my legs will evaporate. It's like, no, the cornerstone of my leg hypertrophy currently to address my SI and to just overall based upon my time and available equipment. Yeah, we're doing B stance RDLs and we're going to do Bulgarian split squats until I run out of weight. And then we'll do maybe some barbell work. And then I'm going to leave. I got to go back to being a dad. And lo and behold, my legs look fine. But it's the mature. So, like I said, it's like sort of mishmash of so many components of this conversation, probably because they were lived experiences as well. But that's kind of what it looks like.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I think there's a lot of good takeaways from that too, just because obviously you're not going to have the same time to delegate towards training always. And the point that I'm trying to get across here for everybody else too is there's going to be always things that are going to come in the way and things that are going to come up in your life, whether it is having a kid, whether it's a career shift or career focus. or otherwise too. Maybe it's something family related or relationship related too. You're going to have things that are going to maybe shift the focus temporarily. But I do think it's important to understand that, like, you're not failing yourself because you have to let off the gas a little bit. And I think this is something that I went through for a long time. And it kind of ties into the whole intention conversation, right? It's just like, well, like you mentioned before too, it's a lot easier to maintain tissue versus build new tissue when you've been training for a long time. So it's a matter of maybe adjusting the lens and looking from a different approach of like, okay, well, maybe right now at this point in time, I can't physically train 5 days a week. And that is okay. But what I can do is train three. Will I lose all my gains? No. Will I still have fun with training? Yes. It's like, okay, well, it's a matter of just like, again, looking at things from a broader scope and realizing that maybe you'll get back to the point where you can train more frequently, or you just have to find a way to modify things accordingly and just make it work with your current life and your current schedule. Because there is always going to be things that are going to be a little bit different, and you likely won't have the same time that you had when you were younger, just because your life is different
Yep,
now.
that is very true. And like something I'd like to leave people with too is like much in the same way that it takes years of equity to get the progress that you've been seeking, you kind of have to intentionally tank everything to lose all of your gains as well. Like after you've put in some effort, it's not like things just evaporate off your body. Like you're not going to accidentally catch a bunch of progress. Like you have to work hard for it. But if you're even doing a little bit, you can maintain most of it. It's not just going to evaporate off of you the second you have to change your lifestyle. So keep those things in mind as well.
Yeah, man. I think that's a good way to end it, though. So, again, thank you so much for coming on. This was a bit of a different conversation than we usually have, especially towards the end. But I just wanted to get your perspective on some things too, just, because you are a newer dad, and I think that obviously there is going to be a bit of a shift of the focus with that too. And I just wanted to get some perspective as to what you yourself have done to navigate that whole process. So, for people that don't already currently follow you, where can they stay up to date with what you do and see some of the content that you put out regularly?
Yeah, the number one place is probably going to be just social media, Instagram. My handle is just my name, so at Eric Bagheera. See daily written posts, kind of like train. Some of it's training, a lot of it's just like it's effectively at this stage like almost like a personal blog or a journal that I use the platform for. The stories though are where I do pretty routine like fitness Q and A's, and they get pretty detailed. So if you're looking for like the training stuff, follow the stories as well. And then with Prescript, www.pre-script.com, it's a continued education company within the realm of fitness. And I run a lot of like either labs where it's basically helping refine your understanding of course content, or I effectively oversee the entirety of their continued education platform called the Prescript Collective. So you'll see me basically do a lot of content creation there and running a lot of the live labs there myself as well.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for coming on, and hopefully we'll talk soon.
Oh man, thanks for having me.